Is it recording now?
One must not get one's knickers in a twist.
I'm trying.
These are the stories your granny never told.
Clint Eastwood loved my apple pie.
I was raising a cow and 50 sheep and 2 chickens.
I slipped upon some spilled onions on the road and crashed my motorbike.
Hey everybody, welcome back to this month's episode of Stories Your Granny Never Told. It's Nikki, your host, and every month I interview older folk about their unexpected life stories. Well, it's the holiday season, maybe you've gotten some snow, you're wrapped up in a scarf, and you're just ready to stuff yourself with chocolates and cookies, and so who better to interview this month than my very own grandma? So this is kind of like related, let's say it's canon with episode 2, which is my grandpa. As you'll hear, they divorced at some point, but there's like some intertwined stories in there. My grandma is like super badass. She was a farmer, a shepherd. She took care of kids. She knows so much about plants. She knows how to like tan leather. Like, she has all of these insane skills that I'm very jealous of. And so I really needed to interview her, and I need you guys to hear how fun she is and all of her traveling around the world stories. And I know you're just gonna love it. It's great. So before we get to that, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, leave a comment, a rating, that will help the podcast get up in the charts. We're also on social media at Stories Your Granny Never Told. And if you like my content and you want to buy me a coffee, there's a link for that on my website, which is storiesyourgrannynevertold.com. And if you have a grandma who's awesome, or a grandpa, or you yourself are a grandma or a grandpa, go ahead and email me and I'd love to interview you to storiesyourgrannynevertold@gmail.com. So, without any further ado, please meet the one responsible for one of the clips in the intro, and my grandma, Marjolaine.
So, in English.
So, if you could please tell us your name and your age.
Yeah.
And who you are.
My name is Marjolaine, and my age is 77.
And you're my grandma.
And I'm your grandma.
So where were you born? Where did you grow up? How did it all begin?
I am born just at the end of the war. My mother was pregnant 8 months. And then the Germans came and did put the whole family out of the house, my father and my mother. And I was born in a truck.
And in the Netherlands?
In Breda, in Holland. Breda.
You were really born in a truck? I didn't know.
Yes. They lived in a truck. Somebody gave them a truck. They lived in a truck, and I was born in the truck. So that's why I like traveling, I suppose.
So did you also grow up in Breda?
I grew up in Breda, yeah.
And then when you were sort of young, you decided to start traveling, right?
When I was 18, I decided I wanted to go to France. I always wanted to go to France. And I went as a girl au pair in a very nice family. I had such a good address. They taught me a lot about the country. I was very happy there. There were 5 children to take care of.
And so when you were there, you learned French and then Yes. You stayed there, or you went back?
No, I stayed 1 year to learn the language. I went back home. And then I married your grandfather when I was 20. He was the man of my life, but I had to share him with other women, so I didn't like that.
And you guys were kind of like hippies and hitchhiking all over and traveling. What was that like? It's different than today. You can't really do that today anymore.
No, you can't anymore, but we could do it. We could go. Well, we went to Spain. We went to countries around, it's still in Europe, but the countries around Holland.
And with a motorbike or no, just hitchhiking?
Oh, yeah. No. Then later we had a motorbike, an old Triumph, very heavy. And we went to the south of France with the motorbike, but we could never do the whole trip. The motorbike always, how do you say that?
broke down?
He stopped halfway to repair it. And well, it was quite fun in those days.
Yeah, nowadays not so much.
For me, it would be difficult now.
Yeah. Well, you still travel a lot now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But now with a car.
Yeah.
Car and plane.
So you were kind of like a farmer for most of your life, or a shepherd. When did that start out, and was that kind of your plan, or what?
No, it was not my plan at all. In Holland, I had a children's farm.
Yeah.
I don't know how you call that.
So you weren't growing children, but you were taking care of them, right?
During the holidays, the children of the big cities came to my place where we already had lots of animals. We had a horse, we had two donkeys, we had sheep and goats and rabbits and ducks and, well, everything, every animal, children, like they could find it at our place. We had a farm in Holland already.
So you just decided you want to have a farm, and then you got all these animals, and then you made this sort of vacation farm for the kids.
Yeah, it was a holiday farm, yeah. And then after 9 years of marriage, we separated, and your grandfather bought a boat and I bought a farm in France. And I wanted to go on with the children in France. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the bureaucracy, how do you call that in English?
Yeah,
all bureaucracy was so different and very severe, and we were not allowed to do it. Oh, I went in a commune. I went with other people, with five adults and my two children. We went to France.
So there was like a hippie thing, or?
Yeah, completely. Completely.
Were you wearing like all the clothes and the hair and everything?
Yeah, and the scarf in my hair and a very big skirts and clogs and
clogs, really?
Yes. Oh yeah, we had our yellow clogs from Holland.
That's very Dutch.
Yeah, and so we could not do the children's farm, and the commune stopped very quickly. It didn't work out.
Surprise!
Five adults, but I stayed. The others went back to Holland, and I stayed, and I never regretted it. And our neighbor was a shepherd, and I was always, when people couldn't find me, I was at the neighbor's barn with his 500 sheep. So I wanted to do sheep too, and that's how it happened. But the first 5 years in France, we were working only doing seasonal work.
Okay, so how many sheep did you first get when you started?
I started with 10 pregnant sheep.
Oh, and then from there, I guess it multiplies pretty quickly.
Well, for some years I had 24, and at the end I had 50 sheep.
And you use them mostly for cheese?
Yeah, they were milk sheep. They, very strange, they came from Corsica. They had Corsican sheep in the south of France because they have a udder, mm-hmm. You say, like a goat, very big.
Oh, more milk then.
It's easy to milk. It's easy to take the milk.
And how did you like learn all of the sheep stuff?
Well, with that neighbor who was a shepherd in the Pyrenees, in the summer he was in the mountains, and in the winter he came to our region because it was warmer and there was still grass.
Yeah.
But in the summer I went to the mountains to learn how to make the Pyrenees cheese there. And we, at 3 o'clock in the morning, we had to go up on the mountain to milk 500 sheep together, two people. So we were milking for hours, and then we went down to make the cheese, and then we had to go back to milk again because you have to milk twice a day.
So you had like good hiking muscles then.
Yeah, at that moment, yes.
How old were you around this time when you were doing the sheep stuff?
I was in my I think I was 35, something like that. Yeah.
Wow.
And I did it for 15 years.
And you were selling your cheese at the market. And
and
all of that. So
and so we had a cow too. We had a cow,
right? And the cow was like a pet, right?
Yeah. Oh, the cow. It was a little Jersey cow, and her name was Flora. And she came in the house and everything. She was like a very big dog.
And you had sheepdogs too.
Yeah, I had one sheepdog, a border collie, and my border collie was very, very well trained. She could get the whole bunch of sheep back to the house without me going to look for them.
How do you train that dog?
I got the dog from a shepherd, mm-hmm. and when my was as a baby, and when she was 7 months old, he took her back. And with a big rope, he attached her meters and meters of rope. He attached her to her mother, and that's how she learned how to do.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she stayed a whole month there, and then she came back, and she could, it was, she just couldn't talk, but she understood everything I said.
And yeah, and she could, like, pick out the sheep by name and everything?
Yeah. I just had to show her with my hands. And then she understood what I meant, and she was always sleeping with the sheep.
Wow, that's a pretty good tool to have so that you don't have to do a lot of extra work.
Yeah.
So at the same time, like, you learned so many skills of the sheep, like you are also doing gardening and growing all of your own food, because you are super organic and like everything came from your own
home. We even made our own bread. And when you have a cow, that is so nice to have a cow, because you only go to the supermarket to buy your green sponges or your matches. With the cow, you have the cream, the milk, the butter. We made our own butter. You have the veal, so the veal meat every year. Mm-hmm. What else? The cheese, yogurt. It's fantastic to have a cow.
We had a few technical difficulties here because Zoom is very hard to work when you don't have good internet, but we're back. Okay, so we're recording again after some technical difficulties, but it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible. I'm living in they call it a white zone here.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have nothing, no telephone, no computer, nothing.
Not the best internet ever, but it's okay. So we were talking about you having your herd of sheep and all of that. What did you do after that, or what did you learn from that?
Oh, what I learned from my sheep?
Sure.
I learned a lot from my sheep. You know, some people do pay a lot of money to do meditation. I just went into the barn in the evening. When people couldn't find me, I was in a barn where my sheep were, I don't know how you say that in English, ruminé.
Yeah, they were chewing the cud.
Yeah, chewing. And it's so peaceful laying there in the straw, looking at me, happy.
So they were friendly sheep.
Yeah, oh yeah, very friendly, yeah. Oh,
that's really nice. You also taught me how to knit. So you got the wool from your sheep and made it into yarn and also knitted it?
Yeah. my poor boys, so your father, they were obliged to wear my hand-knitted sweaters. They had a little smell of sheep, and the boys at school, they were always laughing at them and saying, "You're stinky."
And they're really itchy too, right?
They were itchy and stinky.
Great.
Yeah, but that was in the 70s, you know. It was hippie time and everybody, all my friends were living like that.
Yeah, why not? I think they also told me you baked such healthy bread that it was like a brick because it was so full wheat that it was just...
yeah, 3 times a week we were, how do you say that, mowing the grain? Grinding the cereal for 1 whole hour. 3 times a week, and then I could bake 3 breads, and it was full cereal. So I think my children nowadays, they don't like it anymore, the full cereal.
So, like, you are working all the time. Like, what time did you get up in the morning?
Well, normally between 5 and 6. Oh. That was normal time, and at 9 o'clock in bed in the evening.
Man.
And working all day, because when you have a sheep and a cow, I had my cow, Flora. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a lot of work, but you hardly have to buy anything in the store.
Yeah, you have bread, a sweater, and milk, so you have everything.
I made butter. cheese, yogurt cream. You have so many things with cow milk, you know, and then the sheep.
And the meat, I guess, as well.
And then once a year, we had a veal. And I had three pigs, because when you have sheep and cow and you make cheese, you have lots of whey. When you have 200 liters of milk, you have 20 liters of cheese and 180 liters of whey, which mm-hmm. you can't throw in the nature because it's polluting. So I had pigs, and the pigs were drinking this with cereal in it.
Oh, that's a nice healthy breakfast for the pigs.
And so we had a veal and a pig every year. We are really not vegetarian.
So you had all the meat from them. Did you also tan the hides?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You remember you asked me some years ago, you wanted to tan skin, you call it?
Hide.
Oh, but you never did, huh?
No, it's too much work.
Lucky you know it's very smelling. But we did a lot of tanning, you mm-hmm. call it? No, how do you call that?
Yeah.
Tanning. Yeah, and it was a very, the beginning is really horrible. But then when the skin is drying, then you have the nice work with the talc powder and the talc stone. I don't know how you call that. It's like a lava stone, to make it very supple. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I made, I was cutting big squares of every skin when it was done, because I wanted to make a big, big carpet. And every time my friends came from Holland and said, oh, that looks nice. And I gave them a little square, you know, like to make a little mat in front of the bed.
Yeah. So you never had a big carpet.
Never made my carpet.
What happens after the sheep farm then?
I had to work, because with my sheep farm, we just could live, you know. So I found a job in the Alpes-Maritimes, close to Cannes and Nice and Antibes.
And the Côte d'Azur.
It was in the mountains, and that's where the guy lived, wearing no shoes. Luc and me, we were working there, my new friend Luc, at that moment. We made a farm there in the mountains. You could not come with a car there. You only could, for 15 minutes, you had to climb in the mountains. You had to leave your car down. And it was a wonderful place, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, above Grasse, if you know what it means. Mm-hmm. That guy, he was a director of observatory. And he was completely crazy. He was so very biologic, a little bit too much, where walking bare feet, going to his work on a horse. His wife was, she had a little deux chevaux, a little car.
Typical little French car.
Yeah. And she was not allowed to use it. Her husband was very severe, but she did it.
Because it's like bad for the environment.
Yeah. He was a little bit too much. He was from Paris, you know. And then back to nature. So
yeah, like 100% back to nature. So no shoes, because it crushes the insects, and no fridge, right? You built like an underground ice fridge or something?
Yeah, we only had solar energy, and it was in the 80s. So it was really the beginning here.
Pretty innovative, yeah.
And so we made a fridge with the opening on the north side, and very insulated on the inside, but not insulated on the outside. So it worked really well.
And it was like underground?
It was not underground. It was against a hill.
Ah, okay.
And there was no water. We had to go every day to a source in the mountains with the horse and take 40 liters of water. The family was three people. And Luc and me, so we were five people to live with 40 liters of water. We learned really how to manage it.
Yeah, you better be efficient, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, and not showering every day.
Yeah, obviously. Well, you wouldn't be a hippie if you were clean all the time, so.
Yeah, when we were taking a shower, I did put my dirty clothes under my feet. I was standing on my dirty clothes, and so the water cleaned.
Oh, yeah, two birds, one stone kind of thing.
And when I washed the salad, that water was used to do the dishwashing.
But not washing the salad in the shower.
That would be too much, right?
And how long did you stay there?
I stayed there a whole year. I wanted to see the four seasons, to go with the four seasons there in the mountains. And after some months already, I understood that I missed the trees a lot. We were living
above the tree line.
Yeah, above the tree line. And I didn't know that before, you know, because, yeah, where I live, there's so many trees in Lelande. So I wanted to go back. Luke stayed 2 more years there.
Wow.
I wanted to go back to my farm and my sheep because somebody else was taking care of everything.
Okay.
So when I came back, I just could go on with my things. But it was an interesting experience for me to live in the mountains with very few things and only solar energy. But he was, he made an invention for the NASA, the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say my boss, the people where we worked. And he was very grosse tête, how do you call that? Very
Yeah, really smart.
But he admired me so much because I could spin. I had a spinning wheel.
Hey, it's a skill.
He was full of admiration and he learned a lot of me. I must say he learned a lot of us how doing things organically and ecologically.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was from Paris and he was completely crazy.
Yeah, sometimes they have this idea of what nature is supposed to be like and then they get there and they're like, oh, wait.
Yeah. But it was such a good experience for that whole year. But I was happy to be back in my own environment again.
Mm. And so you basically continued more or less doing farm work until a long time and you were selling your cheese on the market and everything forever, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was selling my cheese on the market and then I got an accident and I had to stop working with my sheep. I had a big accident with my neck. I couldn't carry it. I couldn't milk the sheep anymore. I couldn't carry heavy things. So I sold my sheep to one of the guys who helped me.
Okay.
And then I started to grow bamboo.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about, you know so much about plants as well. Like, okay,
yeah.
Why bamboo? And in the middle of the south of France, it's not really the most Asian place, but.
Well, it seems that in the Le Temps Glacial, how do you call
Ice
that?
Ice Age.
There was bamboo in where I live.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There were mammoths and there was bamboo.
Why not call it the Big Chill or the Nippy Era? I'm just saying, how do we know it's the Ice Age?
Because of all the ice!
Yeah, I met a guy who came to redo my roof and finally he asked me if I wanted to grow bamboo with him. So I did bamboo for, I think, 7 years. We were growing bamboo for decoration in gardens. Eh?
And so like all the knowledge you have about plants, because like if I go in the forest for a walk with you, you will know all the plant names, all their Latin names, what they do. You just picked it up from like experience or how did you learn all that?
Yeah, experience and interesting. I was interested in it, but I don't know all the plants.
You know a lot of plants.
And I still love plants. I still love them. And I try to, Mia is very interested. So I try to tell her.
My
about
little cousin.
Too. Yeah, your cousin.
Yeah. And also like while you were doing the sheep and everything, you also had your own vegetable garden, which was like huge and an orchard as well, right?
Yeah.
So just
every year now my garden gets smaller and smaller. Yeah, because I'm 77 now, 78.
Yeah, 78. You had a birthday during our technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Happy belated birthday. We can celebrate when I come and visit next time.
Yeah. Now I have my vegetable garden in wine barrels.
Yeah.
The soil is very low, you know.
Yeah, you can't bend over so much.
Lately, I was sowing broad beans. Yeah. And I had 3 barrels full of broad beans. And 2 days later, I saw holes. Not any broad bean anymore. There are lots of crows, you say, or crows.
Crows.
Words, crows.
Yeah.
Them all.
Oh, the bastards.
Nothing anymore.
I bet you were getting ready to make like a big soup and stuff, but then they stole all your beans.
It had to grow, you know, when you sow them in November, you will have them very early in the spring.
And when you started out with all of this gardening and stuff, like, I guess when you moved to France, you didn't really know anything about homesteading.
No.
So you just asked people and tried it out, or what?
Well, in the village where we lived, we had such nice neighbors. They were so nice and they taught me a lot. When I lived in Holland, I couldn't even hold a frozen chicken out of the store in my hands. I hated it. And then I came in France and then my neighbors invited us for the le tout cochon, the killing of the pig, which is a village thing, you know. All the neighbors help.
A big party, yeah.
We had to come too, and it was 8 o'clock in the morning. They gave me the intestines of the pig. The smoke was still coming off. It was still warm, and I had to take all the fat out of it.
Oh,
and I didn't want to show that I was terrified. Well, that was the beginning. They taught me everything to make pâté and boudin and everything. They taught me really everything.
So you use the entire pig, I guess.
Oh yeah, dans le cochon tout est bon. You can use everything.
Yeah, even the nose and the feet and everything.
Yeah, I still don't eat the feet, but there are people who love it.
Yeah, there's always someone who likes the weird part of the animal at the Christmas dinner or something. And when did you start traveling? Because you've been, how many countries have you been to? You've been all around the world.
No, not all around the
world.
More
than me.
It's because of Luke's children. He has one of his children who is a mathematics teacher, and he works in French schools around the world. So we went to the Philippines to visit them, and then we went back 5 times to the Philippines, even when they were not there anymore. I really love the Philippines, all the islands. You have to leave Manila very quickly, but then the islands, they are so nice, and the people are so nice in the Philippines, so friendly. And then they moved to India, so we went to New Delhi, and we took the train there and went to Rajasthan. We visited Rajasthan. Then all of a sudden they were in Chile, so we went to Chile, and more countries. Yeah, that was really nice to do. But we only stayed like 2 nights at their place, and then we went visiting everywhere.
It's a good excuse. So what has been your favorite trip and or favorite country?
The Philippines.
Yeah, you love it there, I remember.
I even went back when I sold my house 3 years ago. I wanted to go back on my own to an island. I never had the money to go there. It was a little bit more sophisticated. And so I paid myself that trip to Palawan, it's called. And I was in a little resort. You know, it's so, it's not luxury at all, but you have your breakfast on the beach. The resort has only 13 rooms. You have your breakfast on the beach. It's 3 meters from the resort, you know, the sea.
You're going to make a lot of people jealous right now. All the people who are locked in their house and can't travel are just dreaming about the beach and the resort.
It's so nice. And then at 5 o'clock, the fishermen come back and you eat the fish in the evening, the fish they were fishing. Oh, it was great. Really.
Oh, that's good that you could do that. It was a good celebration for selling your house.
Yeah, it was 3 weeks there, and people do more island hopping there. Do you say that like that? Island hopping, because there's so many islands in the Philippines. But I stayed 3 weeks under the coconut tree with lots of books. There was no internet, no radio, no television. Completely, in another world.
Oh, that sounds good. I would do that right now.
I really loved it. and I thought this is a good experience. It will cost me a little bit more money, but it's so very cheap. You can't imagine 50 cents for a meal and €3 a day for a room. And the prices are not of this time.
So it's just the flight there and getting there.
Yeah, that was the flight is expensive, yeah.
That makes sense. So talking about like internet and TV and all that, I wanted to talk a little bit about how things were back in the day, especially, you know, on your farm. I assume you didn't have internet, obviously. TV, I think, also not.
Yeah, we were playing, doing games with the children. We had no TV for a long time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, then they get bigger and yeah, all the friends have TV, so we had to buy a TV. And but we did other things.
Well, you put them to work, I assume, most of the time.
No, they were at school.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, like, what's the biggest difference that you notice from like these days from when you were growing up or like my age?
Well, we had no mobile. That's a big, big difference, because now you can't even say hello to people when you are in the city, because everybody is talking to the mobile.
But it's good because we can communicate also like this.
Yeah, it's another way of communicating. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the difference, I don't know. I just go with my time, you know. I can't say that it was better or less better. You go with your, you live with your time.
You're pretty modern, you know. You text me, you figured out how to use Zoom eventually. So
yeah.
you keep updating. And what about like cars? Because you were talking about the deux chevaux, but even before that, I guess it was pretty rick-rack. I mean, you guys had that motorbike back in the day that was always breaking down.
Yeah, we always had old cars, and your father and your uncle, my sons, they were always repairing my old cars. That's why nowadays they don't want to do that anymore. They have good cars. And when Niels left the house, he bought for me a new car. Little new car, because he said, Mom, I will not be there anymore to take care of your cars.
That's really sweet. Another question I had is, you got divorced like pretty early. Can, like nowadays it's super normal. I think like 50% of marriages get divorced. Was it like a different point of view back in the day? Was it badly seen, or you didn't really care?
I could not tell my parents, you know,
yeah,
because it was badly seen. It's true.
And your parents were really religious, right?
Yeah, very religious. And then Christmas arrived and my parents invited us. And then I had to tell them I will come on my own. And they started crying. And every Saturday they came to my house with food, because I had no money either. Mm. When I divorced, with my last money, I had to buy a car, because we were living in the country already in Holland.
Oh, yeah.
So I was 10 kilometers from a city, and the bus went twice a day, in the morning very early and in the evening very late. So I needed a car there. I had my two little children. And so my parents, they accepted it very well. My father only said, I told you when you married. But yeah, I think that's a parent's thing to say that. It was not good. I will never tell that to my children, but my children don't divorce, so that's okay.
Yeah, thankfully.
It's so much better, because it's very sad. Very,
yeah,
very sad
for everyone, divorce. I'm sure. Another question is, now you live in France and you're very well integrated into the village, and everyone knows you and thinks that you're French and one of them, which is not easy in that region. I would know.
I think it was because I was working like the people in the village.
Yeah, really hard and not thinking you're better than them or whatever.
And doing agriculture work. So I think that was very well accepted.
Even straight from the beginning.
Yeah, straight from the beginning. It's I really thank the neighbors I had in Viella, in the little village. They were so nice. And we were the first foreigners in the village. They almost touched my arms, you know, and to feel what it was like to be a foreigner.
Oh my God.
People were so curious, but it was, in a way, it was good. They came, the whole village came to see us to the house because, yeah, we were five adults living all together.
That is pretty weird.
Bad thoughts. So we became friends with the whole village. It was incredible. Mm. Incredible. They were so nice. When we arrived there, it was in 74. One neighbor, I talk about a neighbor, but he was like 3 kilometers farther away. Mm. He came with a big basket full of strange fruits that I never saw fresh figs in Holland.
Oh.
Peppers, things of the garden, lots of tomatoes. And he said, yeah, you have nothing and we have so much. So he gave it. Then another neighbor came with a female rabbit who had babies in the belly. He said, yeah, this is to start.
Well, oh, that's so nice.
Oh, we were so surprised. It was really, it was such a good surprise. They were so nice to us. And I lived there for almost 6 years in that village, and yeah, everybody was friendly all the time. Even they must have thought that we were strange people.
Yeah, probably.
They were so nice to us. And then we moved, and Jim and Niels were already 14 and 16 when we moved, and that was so hard because we came in a region where I live now, but in the beginning it was really hard. People didn't even look at us when we went to a bistro to have a coffee. They didn't even serve us.
Yeah, that's what I'm more used to than your other stories. So
it was completely strange. We thought it was everywhere. It was like in my first village, but
you just
that's
got really lucky. People are really closed off to strangers, whether it be someone from the city an hour away or the next country. That's like, I mean, Holland is not that far. It's a day drive from the south of France. But for them, I guess anyone who's not from there is a stranger.
Yeah, that was my second experience in 40 years. And in the beginning, people were, as I told you, not nice at all. There was a group from Paris and they did not accept other people. But then
it's kind of ironic.
Yeah, but with the years, it became very nice. There were more people coming, and it's very nice now. It's really my village.
Good.
But in the beginning, it was not nice at all.
That's unfortunate.
It was a closed village, you know, like so many villages and things in the country. Huh? In
yeah, France. like where I grew up as well. It took like, I don't know, 12 years for people to start, like, stop calling us the Americans. Actually, they probably still call us that. I don't know. I like this kind of like rivalry between the towns, and like, no, those guys are bad, but the other town is good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. You said that you never saw fresh figs before, which like sounds crazy to me now, but makes sense. Like figs, even nowadays, it's hard to get fresh figs. Like I don't get them in New York because they don't ship. Well. I mean, I would get them, but I would pay like $100. I don't know.
Come back to your house. There's big fig trees.
There's so many at home. But so what was like other stuff like that in Holland, you know, I guess you guys had potatoes and cabbages, but not other things.
Yeah. Yeah, like eggplants and all those things in Holland. No, it was leek and cabbage and potatoes.
Yeah, they're not known for their great culinary achievements in the Netherlands.
But they never heard talking about pea soup. Yeah.
Snert. It's good. Huh?
It's the best.
I love that. I should make some.
I make it here in the winter. I make it for my French friends. Everybody loves it.
It's so good. And you the spoon has to stand up straight in it. If not, it's not.
Yeah, you almost have to cut it with a fork and a knife.
Oh, that's great. You were talking about your nearby towns, and this is probably like a leap into the future in the timeline, but you are friends with the late Diana Rigg.
Yeah.
Who was in your village. So a little bit of star talk. She was most notably on Game of Thrones, at least for my generation. For your generation, she was in
the Avengers.
The Avengers and James Bond, right?
Yeah. once. She died in a James Bond movie.
Yeah. So you, how did you meet her?
Well, sometimes a year we have those. Yeah, this is a bad year, but normally we have meals in the salle de fête. How do you call that?
Yeah, like a village party with a big feast.
Yes, kind of. And it happens quite often here where I live.
Yeah, well, there's nothing else to do. So.
And it's very funny. And then Diana was invited too, and I was the only one who was speaking English. Mm. They put me next to Diana.
Because she has like a vacation house in your village.
Yeah,
right?
A little castle.
Yeah.
It's called Chateau Birac. And together we emptied the bottle of Armagnac. So we were big friends at the end. And then every time she came to her house, she gave me a call and we played Scrabble together or we had a meal together. Yeah,
that's nice.
And then later I met her daughter, who is an actress too, Rachel Sterling. She looks like her mother when her mother was young. And Rachel Sterling, her daughter, is married to Guy from the group Elbow of Manchester.
Elbow. Yeah, I remember that. It's such a funny name.
I was telling them that I have been a singer too in my life for some years, but I did not know that he was so famous. I really didn't know. I thought, oh, he's like me. He was singing a bit. So. No, he's very famous in England.
I forgot you were in a band. When was that?
Oh, that was when I was 18. That's how I met
my grandpa.
Because he was playing the guitar in the group.
Yeah, he still does a little bit. yeah. I remember, although that was way later, that your doctor said you could have been an opera singer because you have like really big lungs, but instead you just snore really loud. But you sing really well, still, probably in the shower or something.
Yeah. No, sometimes I'm singing here in my house because, yeah, there's a nice acoustic.
That's a good echo, yeah.
And then true. Once I was singing and doing as if I was on the scene and all of a sudden somebody was looking at me. I had a visitor.
Yeah, that's the problem when you live in the middle of nowhere. People just like walk into your house or like look in the windows. And, yeah. You never know what's going to happen. You also worked on the vineyards, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have your own vineyards, right?
No, I did 5 years of, all the seasonal works. So harvesting grapes, trier le maïs.
Sorting corn?
Yeah.
Why do you sort corn?
In this region, they grow the corn for sowing in the whole Europe. When the corn has been harvested, it goes on a tapis roulant. How do you call that?
I forgot what it's called. Oh. The thing that you have at the supermarket and it rolls. The rolling carpet, but that's not what it's called. Okay, but we know.
They go on a rolling carpet, and you have to stand there looking if there's, in the yellow corn, if there's a red seed or a black seed, you have to take them out.
Pick them out.
It has to be perfect for the sowing in Europe. So that was really bad work. You know, I'm not made to work on a tapis roulant, on a roll.
No, you're outside person.
And so that's what I did too. The harvesting was quite okay, harvesting grapes.
So for people who don't know, you have to pick the grapes by hand or... A lot of people still do it by hand because it's better and you don't get like leaves and twigs inside the grapes to make wine.
It's in the big the big names, you know, Chateau Margaux and all these very good wines, they pick their harvest by hand. You have to cut it. You cut the whole bunch of grapes.
And then you have a basket on your back and you throw them in your back, right?
No, you have a bucket next to you and somebody is walking through the vineyard with that big heavy thing on his back. It's always a man and you have to empty your bucket in that thing.
Oh, that's nuts. So did you learn a lot about wine? I mean, I know you learned a lot from drinking the wine, but also from picking it, right?
Well, I know now how wine is made, yeah.
Yeah, and now actually how Armagnac is made since you live on an Armagnac making property.
Yeah.
You have so many skills. You need to write a book and pass all the skills down.
Yeah, if you would like to do that for me, I can tell you my stories and you write the book.
Well, I need more stories. Recording them, that's the first step.
Yeah, this is so nice what you are doing. It's so interesting because I listen to the other podcasts and it's mm-hmm. It's interesting and funny.
Oh, good. Who did you listen to?
I listened to the female guy, drag queen.
Gypsy the drag queen. Yeah, that's one of my favorite ones.
And Opie and the lady before, the first one I listened.
The first one with Edna.
Yeah, Edna, yeah.
Who's the New Yorker. For me, and like, you know, we don't understand why would you not have internet? I mean, actually, when I was a kid, we didn't have internet, but you know.
Yeah, and you know, when I came to France, I had no telephone for some years. I didn't want a telephone because with my children's farm, we had an extra speaker. So when I was in the garden outside, I could hear the phone ring. It was very, very noisy. And the phone rang the whole day because when parents brought their children, they called me very often. Children mm-hmm. stayed a week or 2 weeks. And when I came to France, I didn't want a telephone. That means that in the 70s, there was a lady who came 3 times a week with telegrams.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, how do you call that? Telegram?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that you used telegrams. That's crazy. Okay, yeah. But it wasn't in Morse code at least, right?
What does that mean, Morse code?
You know, do.
No, it was a little small paper. Well, I suppose the telegram, they did send it like that.
Oh. And so who telegrammed you? How does that work? Where do you go to write a telegram? Do you have a telegram machine at home? Or
Well, you go to the post office and you tell the lady, I want to send a word to my lover. My dear Geraldine, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then the lady at the post office said, my dear Geraldine, I love you, I love you, I love you 3 times.
Stop.
Yeah, and then she does the thing, like you say, I think it was
Morse code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the lady, you know, the oldest cafe in La Bastide.
Yeah.
Tortoret. Madame Tortoret, she was doing those things. She brought telegrams everywhere.
It was the same lady?
Yeah. She was the same lady.
Oh, she's super old, right?
Yeah, she's over 90 now, and the bar is closed, and it's one of the oldest cafes of the whole country, of France. It was on TV. When I came there in 1980, I wanted to have a coffee there. So I went into the bistro. I ordered the coffee, and she came with a little pan. She was heating coffee, which was in there since a week, I suppose. Mm. And I got my cup of coffee, and the only thing was an American fridge. And it did not change. It's still like...
Wow.
And the coffee is still very bad. And the beer, you can only have it in little bottles, you know. They don't mm-hmm. have a tap or something.
There's a lot of stuff like that in France where they just didn't update, so...
And there was the first time I arrived there, there was a big German shepherd who lifted his foot against Le Comptoir and did his pee in the cafe, in the bistro.
Oh, no. Really authentic experience, that is. So you went there and to get a telegram or to send one, but who was sending you? Like the parents? Like, hey, is my kid still alive? or what?
Well, yeah, sometimes my parents did send a message and sometimes I had to send a message. Oh, and there was no telephone in the village. You had to go to the bistro du village and do a certain number. But in the bistro, they had a little cabin. And then you did, I don't remember, it was perhaps, you do 32. And then there's a lady who says, yes, please. And then you have to say, I want to call Holland. Please, can you put me in connection with Holland? Something like that.
And then they do like the switchboard, they unplug the thing and then they plug it into Holland.
Yeah.
And probably to get to Holland, it takes forever because they never call there and they're very confused. And then
And then later, after waiting a long time, she says, you can talk.
Wow.
I remember my neighbors got a telephone, that those neighbors who taught me everything. And I still remember seeing the lady sitting there with that telephone in her hand, not knowing how to do and where to talk.
Yeah.
On which side she had to talk.
And how did you pay when you're in the bistro? Did you like put quarters in the machine or not even?
No. I had to pay where you buy your glass of wine.
How much did it cost to put a long distance call?
Oh, I don't remember. I really don't remember that.
Was it like a lot of money for you at the time?
I suppose so. Yeah. I think it was quite expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. I assume you don't do it every day or something.
Yeah.
When was the first time you took a plane?
Ooh. That's a big question. I think the first time I took a plane was when I went to see your parents in Florida. Because when I went to Holland, I always took the night train.
Yeah, yeah, that you could sleep on the bunks and you wake up and you're there.
Yeah, at midnight, I took the train in Dax. And at 6 o'clock, I arrived in Paris, in Gare du Nord, where I had the best croissants.
Mm.
And then at 12 o'clock, I could take the train to where my parents live in Breda.
You could probably still do that.
Yeah.
It's the same
you
time.
You can still do that, I suppose. But the first time I took a plane, I suppose it was to go to Florida.
Were they still smoking in the planes?
Yeah. And there was a bar in the back of the plane. You could help yourself as many times as you wanted.
That's not fair.
I always took a Bloody Mary in the plane.
I'm jealous now. I wish I didn't know that. Now I'm always going to think like, oh, back when we had a bar.
Yeah, I think some people abused, so they took it away.
Yeah.
And you could smoke. Yes, you could smoke. Yeah.
So was it weird taking a plane or you were just like excited?
Oh, no, it was exciting. Yeah.
And you had to dress up really nice, right, to go on a plane.
Yeah, that's what people did in those days. But I was already thinking, no, it just has to be comfortable when I take a plane.
Yeah, it was a long flight.
But it's true that people dressed, yeah, to take the plane.
What was it like going to America for the first time?
Completely. For me, it was another world. And I have such good memories. Well, it was so funny to be there because your mom was working.
Yeah, she was a firefighter.
She showed me where the bus was. I took the bus to go to the beach. It was very exciting for me. Your dad was working, your mom was working. Oh, and I spent lots of times. I loved it. A library. I could spend a whole day there. You had magazines, you had books, you had a salon where you could sit.
Barnes and Noble?
Yes, Barnes and
Noble. Yeah. I love Barnes and
Noble. Oh, me too. I loved it. I could spend the whole day. Sometimes your mom dropped me there and she picked me up after working, or your father picked me up.
They're like, oh, grandma, just sitting at the Barnes and Noble all day.
Oh, I loved it, really. It was so interesting, and I learned about how people live in the States. And
yeah,
it,
did you have like culture shock going there?
It is different. Hey? It is different.
What was some like weird stuff that you noticed that like Americans do or?
Well, weird stuff was the food. People, yeah. They don't take time to eat. I still remember your mom sitting on the corner of a table with a telephone in her hand and eating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that. And then the other extreme is France, where, you know, if I go to your house for lunch at 12, we maybe come back at 6 or 7.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's just you chat and there's like lots of courses and blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, it's the two extremes.
Yeah. It's completely different. But the nice thing with American people is when I was at the beach, I was on my own. Somebody walks by and they always are ready to have a little talk.
Yeah.
I like it. It might be superficial, but it's nice that people don't walk by without saying anything.
Yeah. Some more Nordic countries in Europe, it's not really well seen to do small chat because people just don't want to talk to other people. But it is kind of nice in the States. Yeah.
Sometimes they were a little bit too nice. Sometimes a man came by and invited me to his house.
Oh, no. Wow. That's straightforward.
Yeah, I was young then, you know. I did not go.
I'm not going to judge you. You like the States now? Like, you've been back a few times to visit some other places, I think. You went to New York.
I went to New York twice. I like New York.
Me too.
Well, we went to Minnesota several times. And Luke and me, we went to see the heads of the presidents, Mount Rushmore. That was wonderful.
Really? I heard that like it wasn't that impressive.
Oh, but well, we were there on the 1st of January and the weather was beautiful. And we were there at 12 o'clock and the sun was on the faces and the expression on the faces changed when the sun changed her place. It was really impressive. I think we were there at the good moments. Yeah, I thought it was really beautiful. I hope Trump will not be next to the four faces.
Usually I don't talk politics, but yeah, I agree with you. Well, my final question is always, what is your advice for my generation?
Oh, wow.
I know.
To take care of yourself and pay attention to the world where we live in. Huh? That's really important.
Like take care of the environment, you mean?
Yeah. That's really important. And love each other.
That's very peace and love. It's a good like end of the cycle. We went from the hippie stories to the that's good. Take care of yourself and the planet. I think that's a good ending. So everybody, now you've met my grandma and my grandpa. I hope you really enjoyed it. And you may have noticed that we put out a new trailer thanks to a friend who is 10 South Sounds on Instagram. I love it. So I hope you like that. And if you want to know more, there is a new episode on every 14th of the month. And there's details and pictures of the guests on the website so you can kind of have an image with the sound. Otherwise, I may take a vacation soon. I may not because, you know, times are weird. But I hope everyone stays warm and eats a great Christmas dinner, whether it be made of meat or cheese or vegetables that you grew all on your own. Happy holidays, everybody.